Today is Thursday, January 24th, 2019, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, the partial U.S. government shutdown reaches a showdown. We'll have the latest. Political turmoil in Venezuela as an increasing number of countries declare their support for the interim leader. And we'll tell you about two high-tech innovations that might be a part of your life in the near future. It's all on today's International Edition. As the partial U.S. government shutdown continues into a second month, President Donald Trump has yielded to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in their own showdown. Mr. Trump will delay giving his annual State of the Union address until after he and Congress resolve the shutdown. AP's Sagar Meghani reports.
It's called the State of the Union. It's in the Constitution. We're supposed to be doing it.
But he won't be doing it while the government remains shut down. Ending a week-long stare-down, the president has conceded after Pelosi told him he would not be allowed to address a joint session of Congress until the government reopens, denying him permission to speak in the House chamber.
It's a very, very negative part of history.
The president at first said he'd find another venue, but admitted last night nothing can compete with the chamber, and he'll give the address after the nation's longest shutdown ends. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
As the shutdown continues, neither side can be sure about the long-term political fallout. Public opinion polls show more Americans blame President Trump than opposition Democrats at the moment, and the standoff is already serving as a likely blueprint for the 2020 presidential election. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more.
Government workers line up for free groceries in Washington, a helping hand at a time of need. There's no end in sight to the partial government shutdown, and politically, both sides appear to be dug in. President Trump remains adamant about funding for a wall along the southern border.
Well, I hope that Speaker Pelosi can come along and realize what everybody knows. I mean, no matter who it is, they know that walls work, and we need walls.
Democrats remain firmly opposed to wall funding, including Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
We want the symbol of America to remain the Statue of Liberty, freedom, equality, not a divisive wall. And we will fight for that. Fight for that we will.
Those who remain caught in the middle are government workers, either on furlough or working without pay, like FBI agent Tom O'Connor.
FBI agents should not have to go work at a store stocking shelves because they can't feed their families on their government job.
Politically, the shutdown helps no one, says Jim Kessler.
Trump is losing on this, Congress is losing on this, and then federal workers who are without pay are losing on this.
Several recent polls have put more of the blame for the shutdown on Trump, says John Fortier.
I mean, public opinion polls, I think, are more against the president than against the Democrats. His numbers have suffered, but just a small amount. And so I think the both sides feel their bases are committed to these differences in principle, and that makes solving this much more difficult.
Democrats also appear unified to defy the president, says Jim Kessler.
Democrats aren't really eager to fund a campaign promise of Donald Trump that he said Mexico was going to pay for. And so we're locked in a duel right now, and somebody's going to have to blink or find a creative way out.
For the moment, neither side appears willing to budge, notes Larry Sabato.
It's hard to see how it will end, but it's bound to end. And both sides will have to give something. Exactly what they'll give is just a question mark right now.
Analysts predict the shutdown impasse could define divided government over the next 2 years and also serves as a likely preview of the next presidential campaign in 2020. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Among the top stories in the world, the new Democratic Republic of Congo president was sworn in Thursday, but fell ill during his inaugural speech. The talks between the U.S. and the Taliban are generating hopes for Afghan peace.
Pakistan launched a short-range ballistic missile Thursday, formally equipping the military with a nuclear-capable rocket that can hit multiple targets. And a vote in Greece's parliament to end a name dispute with neighboring Macedonia has been pushed back to Friday. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent U.S.-Dutch study outlined evidence that the Antarctic ice sheet is losing about six times the ice each year than it did back 40 years ago. Now, another new study suggests that accelerating ice melt is also taking place in Greenland, which is mostly located within the Arctic Circle. The study proposes that Greenland ice is melting faster than had been thought and that it could lead to a faster rise in sea level. The researchers place the blame of the accelerated ice loss on what they call the increasing warming of Earth's atmosphere. Since most of southwest Greenland, the area the researchers focused on, doesn't have glaciers, the study proposes that the lost ice must be actual surface ice. The study found that the largest continuous loss of Greenland ice took place from early 2003 to mid-2013. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. Venezuela's opposition party continues to push to isolate the country's disputed president, Nicolas Maduro, as an increasing number of countries declare their support for interim leader Juan Guaido Thursday. Guaido, the president of Venezuela's National Assembly, declared himself interim president during a day of mass demonstrations on Wednesday. Joining me to help us better understand the situation is White House senior correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara. For those that haven't been following the political crisis in Venezuela closely, Patsy, give us a short recap on the situation.
Well, yesterday, President Trump tweeted that the citizens of Venezuela have suffered for too long at the hands of the illegitimate Maduro regime. So in that tweet, he essentially recognizes Juan Guaido, the president of the Venezuelan National Assembly, as the interim president of Venezuela. The White House then followed with a formal statement, and not long after that, we saw other countries doing the same thing, including Canada, Colombia, Brazil, Panama, and Argentina. We can also see from the day before when Vice President Mike Pence, in a video, declared support of the United States for the Venezuelan people, especially for the planned mass protests against Maduro. And we also know that since Maduro's inauguration on January 10th, the U.S. and the other countries in the Organization of American States Permanent Council have voted not to recognize Maduro's new term. So there's a gradual ramping up, and it escalated yesterday into this big diplomatic crisis that we are in now.
Well, Maduro has ordered all personnel at the U.S. Embassy to leave the country within 72 hours.
Yes.
The U.S. has said he doesn't have the authority to do that. So how likely is a confrontation between the U.S. and Venezuela?
Well, right now we are in a very fast-moving diplomatic crisis. It's very fluid. Whether or not it would devolve into a military confrontation obviously depends on a lot of factors, and I can't say for sure. But we know that yesterday when President Trump was asked if he was considering military force, he said, we're not considering anything, but all options are always on the table. And he said that several times, all options are always on the table. And I feel that this was somewhat of an escalation from last week when I spoke with a senior administration officials who said that all options are on the table except military. At that time, they were still just considering the economic and diplomatic toolbox, including, you know, more sanctions or oil embargo. And what they're doing now is certainly putting more pressure on Maduro, because now governments and companies and international organizations will channel aid through the National Assembly, which will mean a very big blow to the Maduro regime, because international aid, as you know, is one of its major source of income.
Well, now, whatever steps the U.S. takes will not take place in a vacuum. You've got Russia and China, who are supporters of Maduro. How have they reacted to Washington's moves?
Well, Russia has warned for Washington not to intervene militarily in Venezuela, saying that it would trigger a catastrophe, and Moscow is saying that it would stand with Venezuela to protect its sovereignty. China is also calling out the U.S. to stay out, saying it opposes all outside intervention in Venezuela. And as you know, both of these countries have given the Maduro regime tens and billions of dollars, and they have both invested heavily in Venezuela. And so this is a huge political gamble, geopolitical gamble for Beijing and Moscow. And analysts have warned that this could be the next hotspot for the world's big players in their quest to expand their sphere of influence.
Meanwhile, Pope Francis is spending his first full day in Panama today. AP's Nicole Winfield reports all eyes will be on whether he refers to the upheaval in Venezuela.
The Vatican has not yet said anything about whether it recognizes the opposition president of the National Assembly. It's a difficult line for the Vatican. They have local bishops in Venezuela who have been ardent opponents of the Maduro government, but at the same time, the Holy See maintains diplomatic relations with Venezuela.
That's AP's Nicole Winfield reporting. Turning now to the other side of the world, North Korea's official news agency says the country has started preparing for a second summit between leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. AP's Charles de Lestima reports the two countries remain at odds over several issues.
The North state media says Kim Jong-un will wait with patience and in good faith to work towards a common goal with Donald Trump. Despite Kim's determination for another meeting with the president, the two remain at odds over fundamental issues, notably denuclearization. Trump has said they will probably meet again around the end of February, but hasn't said exactly when and where the summit would take place. Experts say a major sticking point is what denuclearization steps Kim should take to move forward stalled nuclear negotiations, and what rewards President Donald Trump should provide to push Kim to take those measures. Nuclear negotiations have been stuck since Kim and Trump met in Singapore last June for their first summit, which ended with vague denuclearization pledges from Kim. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
This is VOA's International Edition, and I'm Jim Bertel. 40 years ago, U.S. President Jimmy Carter negotiated and signed an historic deal with China, which normalized diplomatic relations between the two nations. But in the decades since, China's enormous economic growth and last year's U.S. trade sanctions against Beijing have both nations keeping a wary eye on each other. VOA's Robert Rafael explains.
4 decades after signing the pact, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter sat down with VOA's Greta Van Susteren for an exclusive interview. Mr. Carter cites the 1979 agreement as a lasting success.
What Deng Xiaoping promised the Chinese people, the world, and the United States, and me personally, was openness and reform. And they have had tremendous reform within China. There was zero free enterprise in China before that. And after that, China's become a very dynamic, open society as far as commerce and trade is concerned.
He disagrees with the Trump administration's sanctions against Beijing, but points to Chinese concessions to the U.S. since last year's G20 summit in Argentina.
China has agreed to do two or three things. One is to buy more soybeans, and I think they've made two purchases of a major size of American soybeans. They've also promised to open up investment opportunities by American corporations in China. But we don't get along with China. It hurts both of us, not just us, not just China, but also it hurts the United States economically.
But China expert Christopher Johnson feels President Trump made a mistake by withdrawing the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, also known as TPP.
Fundamentally, most of the challenges we're facing in the bilateral economic and trade relationship with China right now were addressed in some way or another in TPP, especially the key issues with regard to subsidies to state-owned enterprises, issues like forced technology transfer, things with regard to intellectual property rights protection. The bigger piece of it was a lot of other countries as well, and that always tends to work well with China. When a group of countries come to them with a concern, they tend to be far more responsive.
As for the immediate future of U.S.-China relations?
In the short term, I'm concerned. I think, you know, we are experiencing a definite deterioration in the overall strategic relationship relationship, arguably the worst we've seen in a very long time. These economic and trade frictions really are just a symptom of the broader disease, which is how are we going to get along with each other globally, these two big powers?
Johnson adds Washington-Beijing relations are critical to another U.S. concern, convincing North Korea to denuclearize. Robert Rafel, VOA News.
This is International Edition from VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. While some activists in Zimbabwe are in detention and others are in hiding following last week's protests, a 25-year-old singer concerned about his pregnant wife condemned security forces. Columbus Mavhunga reports for VOA News.
That is Obey Makamure, better known as Toki Vibes by his legion of followers. He is singing his latest offering, condemning last week's brutality of protesters by Zimbabwe security forces. The protests were triggered by a more than 150% fuel hike announced by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Makamure says he thought up the latest song after his pregnant wife, Donet, called him, saying she could not breathe properly because of tear gas released by security forces to control protesters.
But she's pregnant. We
have been together for a long time now, about 5 years. She has been having problems of miscarriages, so I was hoping this fourth one I'll be able to hold my baby. Then I heard she's now in tear gas. So I realized whether I like it or not, I'm involved. We do not have to be ignorant about other people's lives. I cannot be that person. My music is about people. It is not about me. If my life is for my own security, then it's not worth it, says Makamure. He says since he released the song earlier this week, friends and relatives have been calling, fearing for his safety. He maintains he sings about social life, not politics, even in his latest song.
I'm not into politics. I'm for the people, you know. The army is for, it's our security, and the police, it's our security. So anytime we feel like they are abusing our rights, we should be able to say no. Even if we die for saying no, it's better than just being like a slave, you know.
On Tuesday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa promised to roll heads in the security forces because of his brutality during the 3-day protest last week over a 150% fuel hike. The government-appointed Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission says at least 8 people died from excessive force by the army and police that used live ammunition during the protests. Commission member Sheila Matindike says security forces also instigated torture.
It is acknowledged that property, including a police station, police vehicles, and shops were destroyed and vandalized or looted. This, however, did not justify torture of citizens by the security forces, as the right to freedom from torture is one right that cannot be derogated from under any circumstances.
While Zimbabweans wait for the government to deal with those lost rights, musician Toki Vibes has a few words for the Zimbabwean army.
We need peace, love, and unity. Make sure all of those who are suffering, they are safe. Because those who are rich, they can protect themselves. But we, the poor, the disadvantaged ones, we need your help. Protect us.
Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And this is International Edition. Cameras and alarms keep offices and warehouses safe around the world. But a new kind of security guard is making the rounds, looking for anything that is unusual. Michelle Quinn reports.
Roaming the cubicles, being alert, checking for anything out of the ordinary. That's the job of a security guard, including this one.
It's basically the combination of incredible sensing and an autonomous car that moves through your indoor spaces. It builds models of what is normal and then looks for anomalies. It does that by using a whole vast array of sensing.
Travis Dial created Cobalt, which looks like a moving piece of office furniture. Beneath its soft fabric exterior is a roving security system equipped with more than 60 sensors that pick up heat, moisture, smoke, people. Cameras all the way around give it eyes everywhere. Microphones track unusual sounds.
Everything else is basically like an autonomous car. So, you know, depth cameras and other sensors that can detect obstacles so that the robot can safely move through these indoor spaces.
As it moves, Cobalt builds a model of the indoor space. Then the robot looks for things that aren't right. A stranger in the office, a spill, an open door or window. It picks up carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide leaks, and it knows if the Wi-Fi is down. If Cobalt notices anything strange, it contacts an off-site security specialist who comes on the screen to resolve the issue. Today, that's Bogdan.
Hi, Travis. Do you mind badging in for me, please?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you.
As the robot's navigating through the space, it'll start to say, hey, I think I see a person, a potential, you know, intruder. It's flagging those people to Bogdan.
Security guards of the future may be something like Cobalt, a machine that roams the halls during the off hours, but relies on human intelligence when it needs help. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
And as we look towards the future, let's turn from robotic security guards to flying cars. Aerospace giant Boeing says its autonomous flying car prototype has conducted a successful inaugural test flight as it seeks to revolutionize urban travel. Reuters' David Doyle reports.
It could be the answer to the traffic jam headaches of your commute. Boeing's flying car prototype, which the world's largest plane maker said on Wednesday had achieved a successful inaugural test flight. Boeing's so-called low-stress mobility is competing with arch-rival Airbus and numerous other firms to introduce small self-flying vehicles capable of vertical takeoff and landing. It's a technological field that could revolutionize urban transport and parcel delivery services. Boeing said on Tuesday it had achieved a small but significant step when its 30-foot or 9-meter vehicle briefly hovered a few feet off the ground before making a soft landing. The company is also planning tests later this year for a package-hauling version that can lift 500 pounds. And it's working with the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration to develop a traffic management system for three-dimensional highways, allowing waves of autonomous vehicles to glide safely around buildings. But what Boeing also has to navigate is numerous safety and regulatory issues, as well as rival concepts. They include Airbus's pop-up self-flying capsule, Volocopter drone taxis, and Aeromobile's stretched limousine that turns into a fixed-wing aircraft.
That's Reuters' David Doyle reporting about the future. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. My thanks to our studio team, Jackson Vungani, Dan Crafton, who is our engineer, and I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for listening.